Welcome to Crossroads and Cauldrons. We are two witches with jobs, families, and busy lives just like you. We talk about weaving the web of community, practicing magic, and life in the Deep South. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Selena, and you're listening to Crossroads and Cauldrons podcast. We have a super exciting guest for you today. We are speaking with Jackie Smith, and Jackie is the owner, founder, and president of Coventry Creations, an internationally known maker of spiritual products, and a co-owner of Candlewick Shop in Ferndale, Michigan. Over the past 30 years, she has created hundreds of magical candles. She teaches spiritual development classes, podcasts, volunteers, and is a best-selling author of Coventry Magic. And she's here to talk about her latest book, which just came out, and I just read it, and it's fantastic, The Big Book of Candle Magic. Welcome to the show, Jackie. We are thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much, Selena. I am very excited to be here, and I'm so excited to show off my new book. I'm very proud of it.
You should be. It's wonderful. So this is your first time on the show. So before we start talking about the book too much, let's get to know you a little bit. So can you tell us a little of how you came to witchcraft, particularly how you came to work so deeply with candle magic?
I was young. I was in my early 20s, 21-ish. And this was so long ago. This was pre-internet. Mm-hmm. The only stores, there really weren't many stores around in the metaphysical spiritual world. And I was in a Walden Books? I don't know if they still exist, but there just so happened to be the Book of Runes that had the clay runes in it and the book. And I opened it up and I said, "What is this?" And I'd read about these tomes of metaphysics, and I'm like, it was like, no, this isn't what it is. And I'd always been drawn to the spiritual side of things. I mean, even as a kid, I wanted to be a nun, but then I realized that nuns weren't allowed to do the spiritual things that I wanted to do. So that was off the list. So I've always been drawn to this. So when I found the Book of Runes, I went, okay, so there is more. And so that took me on a little journey. And I would go and I would search out, get into the yellow pages, because yes, mm-hmm. Yellow pages were first really pages and they were really yellow. And so I get in there and get all of it, look under all kinds of different headings to find different bookstores. And so I would start to find different occult shops and metaphysical bookstores and started my journey that way. And I just loved it. And I've always loved candles too. So I was the kid who would mess with the dinner tapers at the dinner table and get my hand slapped. And, but I still went back for more, but I would just love to watch the candles. So I would just watch the candles at the dinner table because I loved the transformation that happened. And I was like, I wanted to know why it happened. Why did it work? And I'm not saying I was so obsessed by it, but I just loved that process. And so then it was a natural progression as I was learning magic. And candle magic intrigued me the most because you watched your magic happen. So that, I loved it. And then you can add stuff to it and have fun with it and do all kinds of cool things.
I love that story. It reminds me very much of my own early witchcraft days of finding things in bookstores and literally thumbing through the yellow pages. Of course, we didn't have any metaphysical shops and we still only have like 3 in the whole state. So it's a little backward here. You may know that already. I don't know. But so yeah, it's interesting to see that those parallels, like where you entered the witchcraft generation is not necessarily the same as your chronological generation.
Right.
But we're still, you know, we're still very much living like that here, except of course we have the internet. So that helps. But, I remember having a big, you know, those little underbed boxes that like have wheels and rolling full of Yankee candles from the mall. And I thought I was very special because I had the fancy candles, right? For my, that was my magic. This was my candle magic box.
I love it.
And every time you opened it, well, they all start to smell the same when they're in a box together. So I just have wonderful memories of candles, and I've been a little bit of a pyromaniac my whole life. So candle magic has always been my favorite too.
Before I started making candles and I wanted to figure out how to get the scents and the herbs in the candles, I was studying to be an herbalist at one point in a correspondence course. And as I was taking this correspondence course, I went, this doesn't teach me to be an herbalist. This teaches me how to cheat on tests. So, but I loved the magical part of the correspondence course. And so I started making my own card catalog, like little 4x5, 3x5 card catalogs. And I had this great cross-reference thing and I wanted to, and it was all magical. And so I'd get a 7-day candle and I would put it in a pan of water and melt it and clip the wick up and melt it. And then I would add oils and herbs to it and like wiggle it. Mm-hmm. So I would make my own candle because this candle didn't exist then. I mean, you could get like a Yankee candle, like you said, you could get a scented candle somewhere.
Not the same.
I wanted to make a magical candle. So first I started there and then I learned that adding a lot of herbs to a glass candle is a bad idea.
Yeah.
It makes a little bit of a bomb at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done some candle bombs myself, so I know. I think everybody has to do at least one candle bomb before you take the warning seriously.
I love the look of the makers that put just the crystals and the flowers and it's so
beautiful. They're so decorative objects. They're not for burning.
And so I it's okay. It can be part of your magic, but just kind of pull them out. I say pull them out and make it part of your magic on the outside. I think it can be part of the spell where you're making it, pulling it out to the outside of the tin or the candle holder, or even because it's full of wax, you can put it on the glass or the tin. Mm-hmm. On the outside.
There's so many ways that you can work with herbs and oils and different things and crystals along with your candle magic. I love that you talk about that in your book. So many different ways of working with candles. And we're already talking about the book. Let's go ahead and talk about the book some more. So the first half of the book is a really thorough dive into the mechanics of spellcraft, honestly. It would apply to every form of spellcraft, not just candle magic, like really getting down to the root of what you're wanting to accomplish, why you're doing this spell, you know, that part of it, which is very important and often overlooked in just books of spells. So talk to us a little bit about that process of really distilling what your magic is going to be about before you even start the spell itself.
This is the superpower. This is everyone's superpower. We can all light a candle. I mean, lighting one of my candles or lighting anybody else's magical candles is great, and it'll work. It will, and it'll work today. You might get the bump in pay, or you might get the thing, or you'll get the date, or you'll resolve an issue real quick. But it'll work today. But then you got to do another one and another one and another one. And that's what I learned for myself. So all of this is my practical experience at the same time. I've always loved psychology too. And I know when I was self-study, I started Coventry Creations to make money to go to college. So I wanted to be a psychologist. I didn't want to go to psychiatry school because that was way too much money, but I wanted to be a psychologist. And I never made it to college because I kept making candles. But so it was a lot of self-study on my part. I would talk to psychologists, have my own therapist, and I would read books about this, and it always fascinated me. So I'm not talking about super self-study, but the interest is there. And so one thing that struck me was how much when my parents would say to me, talk about psychology and mental health is as if it was witchcraft. I remember hearing my dad say that to me as I am a witch and not really telling them about it. and like that voodoo or that, you know, witchcraft of psychology. And I was like, huh, maybe it is. So then I started watching spellcrafting and I started watching root work and I started watching what people do at shamanism and what does it do to a person? What is it? What happens on a deep soul level when it actually works? And I realized that if you go deep, if you go deep in your healing, if you find out what the root cause is, if you find out what is really bothering you, if you marry your magic with a deeper healing practice, then you win. You win. You get a big change in your life. You get what you want. And it's funny. I was just writing. I was writing an article today for one of my websites, and I was realizing that as I was launching the Big Book of Candle Magic, I forgot to do my work. I just got into the business of launching a book, and I forgot to do the work that I write about in this book, which I find highly ironic. And I got miserable, and I became a giant ball of mess. And I sat down and I said, what's wrong with me? And because I'm human, just like, you know, we're all human. I might write about it and you think I might have my poop in a group, but, I have moments of clarity and I just like, what's wrong with me? And I went, oh, I forgot to do my work. So I sat down and I did my work, and it's the work that I have in the book. And I went, I forgot to do my work, and here I am. And I relaxed and I did my work and I let everything go. And I did the candle work and put all the pieces together, like I talk about it in the book. And the next day it was the number one release. It was the number one new release. I mean, it was like, I when I let it go and I was like, it's not, I was just a miserable mess. And then I went, oh yeah, I forgot to do my work. And I did. And within 24 hours, it got to be the number one new release in three categories. So I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I got to do my work.
You know, that's the thing that we forget about the most. Like, you're a witch. You have the tools to get through whatever it is you're dealing with. I have to remind myself of that. I think we all do that. So it's good for people who are just starting in their practices to understand that we all do that. We all forget our tools and have to be reminded. Hopefully we have a good spirit team that will nudge us. Mine are very good at nudging gently, not gentle nudges. But I like what you're talking about. In the book, you talk about healing. All magic is healing. And I think of it that way too. I think of it in the terms of balancing, like whatever you're having to add or withdraw from a situation to make it balance out to where you want to be. And I look at healing as balancing too. If there, like physical healing, if there's an imbalance in the body, you know, healing that emotional imbalance. So I really liked the way you talked about magic being a process of healing, all of it, even if it's not healing magic. You know, prosperity magic is healing your relationship with prosperity, with stability, with meeting having your needs met, that sort of thing. And it's really a process of soul crafting. And you do that so beautifully by sort of breaking down all of those processes. And everybody's going to go buy the book. But can you talk to us a little bit about how you got to that process of breaking down, that process of asking why again, now what, you know, how did you come to that? You said you studied psychology a little bit. I went to college for psychology. I didn't finish, but I have that deep love of psychology and witchcraft. And I agree with you. I think they're one and the same. Trying to understand the psyche.
Yeah, right. Why do we do what we do? And when we understand what we do, we can craft the change we need to craft. So I have for many years have held the theory that magic comes down to one of five things. You're doing it in one of five branches. You're doing something for prosperity or some material need. You're doing something for protection or some safety need. You're doing something about a relationship, or you're doing something about healing, or you're doing something that needs dealing with something that needs to be cleared. And I started talking about that when I brought out Coventry Magic, and I was doing making shelf talker cards for my products, and I couldn't do more than the five categories. So I really had to think about this and meditate on this. And I'm like, well, it really kind of comes down to these five things. So I had many years to really prove that theory. And it works continuously. I went to a convention and I said, all right, you guys challenge me. And I had hundreds of people challenge me. And I did readings for hundreds of people with these cards. And it continues to work 10 years later. And then as I was writing about the book, I went, oh, guess what that is? It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is a psychological philosophy that if you don't, you have to take care of your base needs. And it's like in a triangle. You have to take care of your base needs, like your physiological needs. Like you got to have food in your belly. And then you have to have a roof over your head. And then you have to feel safe. And then you have to have companionship before you can self-actualize. And self-actualizing to me is magic, right? Self-actualizing is I can create, I'm empowered to create whatever I want to create. So that I was like, oh yeah, that's the same thing. I just didn't know I forgot I was influenced, which is interesting because Maslow was influenced by, he was studying with, I forget which tribe, he studied with different First Nation tribes to get to that philosophy, high full circle.
Yeah, I was going to say, it goes back to a lot of our, you know, energy healing and that sort of stuff, working with chakra systems. You have to take care of, you know, your roots and all of those things first before you can work your way up that column. So,
and the why is that came from my sister, Patty, who's my business partner and my healing partner. I was having a really stressful moment and I was taking over the sales department, and I spent several days organizing everything and color coding everything and getting it just so perfect. And then not wanting to make one phone call. Mm-hmm. And then I went out to her and I said, I can't do this. Nope. I can't do this. I'm not doing this. I can't do this. This is not what I'm doing. We have to hire somebody. I can't do this. And she looked at me and she said, I'm going to ask you a question and I want you to answer me with the very first thing that comes into your mind. Don't think about it. I just want you to answer me. And she goes, okay, fine. She goes, well, why is that? I said, because blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh. And I don't even remember what I said at that moment. I do remember what I said. I said, because everybody will hate me. And I'm like, wow, that's, you know, where did that come from? Why? And then she said to me, well, why will everybody hate you? And I don't remember what happened after that because it's a long ago. And so from that moment on, her and I would tag team with each other. Why is that? And so that became part of my process when I'm doing healing work or doing reading with people. What do you want to do in your life? Well, I can't do that. Well, why is that? So it just becomes part of my magical process.
Yeah.
And then you get down to what you really need. So it's that primal brain that holds the answers, because we spend our lives negating the primal brain. We're telling ourselves, you don't really want that. Because if you think about it, that primal brain is like that crazy 3-year-old that's on a whole bunch of sugar and will not take direction. Mm-hmm. So we
or
learn.
My current 11-year-old, same thing.
So we learn, you know, impulse control. So we kind of have to lift that impulse control for a little bit to get to that primal brain that says, what I really want is this. And the crazier the answer is, the truer it is. It could be, you know, oh, why is that? Because the aliens are coming. Wait, what? but then the aliens could be, this feels so foreign to me. Mm-hmm. The aliens could be, I just don't want it. This is painful, or this is too difficult, or this is too new. You know, I mean, it could be Bigfoot. I don't know. But it could be just something so weird. But that weirdness, inside the weirdness, is the true answer. Because the primal brain is holding that.
Mm-hmm. And it speaks in symbol, you know, which we kind of have to decode.
Yeah. And that's where our truth is. Our truth is inside that rather than all this logic, because we can logic ourselves. We trick ourselves out of all of our magic. Well, maybe not all of it. We trick ourselves out of our magic so easily. Well, I didn't really know. That was just a coincidence. Did I really think that, or did I really see Aunt Betty at the end of my bed telling me to go ahead and buy that stock? I don't know. Did I? No, I really didn't. You know?
Yeah.
So we trick ourselves out of that.
All the time. I was, as I was reading your book, there was one part that, that you were talking about that kind of made me laugh all over the kitchen, because my bestie is always trying to win the lottery. Always. She's always doing spells to win the lottery. She has won it, but she only got like $1 or $1.49 or something. She won the lottery. Her magic worked. But that's not what she meant. So I loved hearing you talk about that and talk about how to break down, because people, I don't know. I teach witchcraft and I teach spellcraft, and people don't know where to start often, you know, and they don't, or they want the recipe. They want to follow the recipe, and then the thing happens, and they don't recognize that they are the creator of this recipe. It's got to be personal, because the situation is going to be personal. It's going to be unique. And you have to really dig down to the root of why you're doing it, how you're going to do it, what you need to gain from it. And it has to be something, you know, usually once you do that part, it's not so big as I want to win the lottery, or, you know, I need a bigger house. It usually starts off with, I don't feel secure to keep food on the table, you know? And so you start working on, why don't you feel secure? You know, what can we process there? What needs to be healed there? So you can remove that block, because that's an obstacle keeping you from, because you're deep down somewhere telling yourself, I'm not secure, I'm not safe in some way. And that's what you're perpetuating, you know?
It's really profound. And I love, you know, I do like recipes. If people say, show me the recipe, and in this book it says blah, blah, blah. Say, well, okay, well, this is a great start. Because when you don't know where to start, sometimes the world is too big. The options are too many. So you find a recipe to start with, which is perfect. It's a great inspiration. So if there's one thing somebody takes away from the Big Book of Candle Magic, is that recipes are a great place to start. And then I love it when you don't agree with them. That's not for me. Mm-hmm. I want to do this. Or I don't have a green candle for magic. I only have a pink candle today. And so, or I have a purple candle, or I have a white candle, or I have a black, or worse yet, I have a black candle.
Uh-huh.
I only have a black candle, and I need to do a prosperity spell. What do I do? You do whatever you need to do. It's okay, because your magic is your magic and you set your intent. And in the back of the book, I show you how to use a black candle for prosperity if you need to. So you can take a new perspective and shift your magic however you need to shift it. Shift the energy or the intention of the thing and make it work for you. So letting that relax. Have fun. It's the first thing is like, let's have fun. Let's relax. Everybody relax. And just because someone decided that this was the thing, they were the decider, you can now be the decider in your own magic.
Because that was the thing for them in their moment, you know?
And so think about when that person was working their magic. So when did they write that? This was written in the 70s or the 50s. This book was written in the 1800s. What did they know? So this book is 60 years old. And so what do you know now? So five finger grass doesn't necessarily mean the same thing to you today in 2022 as five finger grass then. Mm-hmm. You know, when I saw five finger grass and the name five finger grass, when I was younger, I thought the first thing I thought of was the five finger discount. And so I'm like, I don't know about five finger grass. So, but for five finger grass was different for them. It was like hard work. You're using all your fingers. And I'm thinking five finger discount is when you swipe something off the shelf at Kmart. and you put it in your pocket. So see how that's like totally different, mm-hmm. totally different meaning. So it's okay that, so the law of signatures, is that, what it looks like to you is what it means. Mm-hmm. And so there is that's a very powerful, that's why there's so many different common names for these, herbs that have the Latin names. So what it looks like to you is really important.
Mm-hmm. And how it fits into your culture as well, you know, cause every culture works with different plants, different animals, you know, have completely different meanings depending on where you're coming from and your personal experience too. You may have eaten something that made you sick, you know, and that's supposed to be for healing. And you're like, No.
chamomile is an amazing example of that. Chamomile in one culture is a luck herb for gambling. I'm like looking at my box of chamomile tea going, really? Where does it say that on the label? It says relaxing and calm. How do those two things work? So those are the things that confused me when I was first getting into magic and herbs and stuff. I'm like, how can chamomile be for gambling and luck and be for, relaxing and calming and peace for, you know, how can they be both things? Mm-hmm. So that's when I started digging deeper and deeper. So why is that? Why? Because chamomile relaxes the, anxiety. Have you ever noticed really good gamblers don't have that anxiety? Mm-hmm. They're just like, let it ride. But bad gamblers are like.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of tend to think of, I'm kind of animistic in my views. So I see everything as alive. So I would look at, you know, an herb, we'll say chamomile, the same way I would look at a person. That a person doesn't have one thing that they can do or that they're good at, you mm-hmm. know, they're multifaceted. They may have one or two things that they're really good at, mm-hmm. but you know, they're capable of doing multiple things, especially in combination with other people that have different skills, you know, different qualities are going to shine. And that's the same thing when you're putting together, you know, a combination of herbs. They can work together in different capacities for different functions, and you have to get to know them, you know, that process. And you talk about this a little bit in your book, as far as co-creating with the tools that you're using. And I love how in depth you went into that with specifically to candle magic. Of course, it's a book about candle magic, so everything's going to come back to that, but you had some really, really excellent ideas in there. And I was like, oh my God, I haven't thought of that. So I loved reading this book. So tell me a little bit about how you, I guess just probably from playing with it, but you talk to me about it. How did you get to find all of these creative ways of using, I mean, and this is, a lot of this is lists, just there are lists in the back half of the book, tons of indexes of, magical symbols and zodiac associations and herbs and colors and just everything is back there. And they all sort of relate back to those five categories you were talking about before, mm-hmm. but you use them in so many different ways. How do you figure that out? Are you just very creative?
Well,
maybe
for you astrologers out there, I have seven planets in Virgo.
Well, bless.
So it usually scares people.
So I have a Virgo moon, and I married a double Virgo, and my bestie is a Virgo. I'm surrounded by Virgos, and yeah. I have five planets in Sagittarius. So it's okay.
You know, that's funny because I'm so surrounded by Sagges. So I think they usually say Sagges and Virgos don't get along. I think we need each other.
We do.
I do, because
somebody's got to pull us down to the ground, and somebody's got to dig y'all out of your rut.
Yeah. So I find systems. Mm-hmm. That's how I see how things work. And I look at big concepts and I bring it down to systems. That's what I love to do. I love doing that. It's one of my favorite things. So I'll say, like, I love how you talked about the personalities and the like frankincense. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Frankincense has got 7,843 ways to use it.
It's all every purpose.
Yeah. every book you read is like, frankincense is good for this, frankincense is good for that. And so I was really like, why is frankincense good for all these things, you know, with all the different personalities of it? And so frankincense was one of those things that like bugged me, like, why? And so then I started to understand frankincense. What does frankincense do? What are its like core personality traits? Layers. I'm like, oh, I understand. Frankincense elevates. So what does it do to you? It's like not only the aromatherapy, because this isn't an aromatherapy book. This is more energy. So what does it do to your energy? It elevates your energy. So you can, like when you're in a rut or you're really tight, your energy is really tight, frankincense loosens it up. And then frankincense raises your vibration in a way that things that aren't you, can't stay. So it's a great exorcism herb. So it goes, well, it's not an herb, it's a resin, but we call them all herbs right now. So just things that aren't you can't stay. So that's the exorcism. And so why is it also a great money herb? Well, I found that when you relax about money and you go with the flow a little bit, when you relax about money, suddenly money shows up. So you open the valve to prosperity. So that's kind of what it does. So that's how kind of I've been doing this for over 30 years. And so this is how I start to look at things and how I'm working with things. And so this is how I look at everything. Like if I have a cupboard full of stuff and a junk drawer full of stuff. So I want to do a spell and I don't know what I have today. And I'll open it up and I'll go, who wants to play? And I'm just pulling stuff out and I'll say, well, this is what I want to do. And I just kind of start pulling on the vibrations. Who wants to come together? And then I look at them and I go, well, why? What part of your personality is, why do you want to come out and play? Oh, I need to do a spell about clearing myself of a relationship with somebody or the ties that I have with someone. But I'm getting a green ribbon wants to come out and play. That doesn't make any sense. Okay, now this herb wants to come out and play. And this is literally what was happening. This is a real thing. And then I was like, well, I want to borrow soap now. You know, and so it's just like I started listening to the vibrations of things and it was kind of weird, but it worked.
I love that because you're listening to the tools, you know, you're not using them as objects. I know they technically are objects, but you're working. It's that whole process of co-creating. You're working together, you know, and you get better results when you're not trying to force. It's like being in a job you don't want to be in. Yeah, you can do it, but you're not happy about it. Versus doing something that you really enjoy and are passionate about. And they have things that they want to help with. And when they're passionate about it, it all works together better.
Oh, I just so you know, the green ribbon was because I needed to put all that energy into the earth. Ooh. I created a slide out of it. It's funny.
I love that.
I just need to tie it into the earth and just send it in. And it wanted it to be green because it wasn't dead. Mm-hmm. And the soap was because I needed to wash myself with it. It was an unscented bar of soap and mm-hmm. I needed, and it was pulled. It was like washing myself with chalk. Have you ever used chalk or something like that to pull energy? It pulled all the energy out. And it was like, how perfect. I'm washing that off of me. And then I took the soap, cause it was like a organic soap and then I could pitch it and not worry about it. I cleansed myself with soap. Ha ha.
Sounds crazy, doesn't it?
I know. But instead of like smudge or anything, I used a bar of soap to clear myself. Ha ha. But yeah. So.
No, but those things work. A lot of the sort of folk magic, you know, is that's what it's based around. It's based around what you have and the function it already is doing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the function of soap. It's for cleansing. You know, that makes sense to me.
Exactly.
But yeah, but you're probably not going to find that in your metaphysical store or in your little spell kit, you know, for cleansing. It's going to be some smudge or something like that. I really like too that you include a lot of the warnings about candle magic. And I know you're serious. They don't know you're serious. They're still going to do it. They're going to have candles explode all over their house. But tell us a little bit about some candle safety. I do see all the beautiful candles. You mentioned earlier about candles that are so beautifully dressed, and they're just, there's a mountaintop of herbs on them, and they have crystals stuck in the top.
Yeah.
And I cry a little inside because everyone that buys them is probably new, doesn't know to take it off. It doesn't say on the label, let's remove this stuff. Thoughts? Well,
so flame is an element. And so if we're working with magic, it's one of the elements we work with. So I just want to start with, you're using all the elements in candle magic. It's so cool. Because you're using air, fire, water, and earth. Fire is easy to pinpoint because it's there.
Because it's right there.
Earth is the wax that you're using, or the, and also the container that it's in. Air is the evaporation of the wax or the consumption of it. It also is the cooling of the wax when it's made.
And it feeds the fire too. You know, if it's not there, you got no fire.
Exactly. And then the water is that molten state of the wax that it gets in when it's made. And when, so it's, you use all the elements to make it and you use all the elements to consume it. How cool is that?
I love it. That's the whole idea. That's the essence of transformation, which is the essence of working with the element of fire. Anyway, I love candle magic. You keep going.
So now you've got, now you're doing it magic and the, you know, the big player is the flame. Mm-hmm. And you're asking the elemental of fire to do some big transformation for you, to bring heaven and earth together, which is candle magic. Heaven meaning the earth is what you want. Heaven is it coming and bringing it all together. So it's alive. That flame is alive. And so don't leave it.
Mm-hmm. And don't overfeed it. It's like a gremlin.
Yeah. And don't overfeed it. I love, oh my gosh, I'm stealing that.
It's copyright, so, Selena.
And so it's alive, especially if you're doing candle magic. And that's why you don't want to leave it alone. And, you know, you might be in the other room, but go check on it. Don't forget about it. You think you know what's going on. You don't know what's going on. I have seen flames jump like off a candle and onto something where the candle is no longer lit and that flame is on something else. It's so crazy when you're doing candle magic. I've seen flames split. I've seen wicks. And then there's also the technical thing. So suddenly the wick is to the side because you're... When you're hand making a candle and you're trying to keep that wick straight, sometimes when the candle cools, it just makes that wick push, it pushes the wick to the side. And even when we're making it at Coventry, we do everything we can to pull that wick up center. Sometimes it doesn't happen. And so that wick is suddenly touching the glass or suddenly touching the side. And if you have a tin, or maybe it's a glass container and that's touching something close, it's amazing how that catches on fire. So I was experimenting with these really cool wood laminate covers for glass to do some really cool candle holders. So I was testing it. And I had one of those candles where the wick was not perfectly centered. And I came back into my office because I left the candle unattended. And the wood laminate on the glass candle holder was smoking.
Oh my gosh.
It wasn't on fire, but
it was that hot. That's crazy.
It was that hot. So these are the things that can happen. And then there's the accoutrements inside the candle, whether it's a crystal, a stone, or herbs or different charms or whatever. It's really fun to see them. It's really fun to work with them. And then really at that point, you really don't want to leave it unattended. So if you've got stones in there, just know if they roll towards the wick and the candle is lit, there's a couple of things that could happen. nothing could happen and you're just fine. And you're going to go, they don't know what they're talking about. They're too paranoid. The second thing that can happen is it could put the candle out, you know, and because it's called gutters the wick. It stops the technical thing. So what happens is the flame melts the wax and the wick, it wicks the wax up. And then the flame consumes that wax as fuel. So then it wicks up more wax and it wicks up more wax. Well, when the stone rolls and hits the wick, it either can bend it so it puts itself out, or it can stop the wax from being wicked up. So that's one thing. There's your serious technical thing for the day. Or it can get hot and go, which has happened. And crystal, like quartz, will do that. Quartz will crack. Different stones, if it's more crystalline, will crack. Heavier stuff won't, but it'll knock your flame over. And then there's the herbs and the flowers, which are lovely. Now, a lot of people say, oh, they just float to the bottom. Sure. Mm-hmm. But if you're at the beginning of the burn, and what happens is the middle is what burns first, and then your burn radius goes out over time. So it all falls into the middle. So then that's when you get the torch. Been there, done that.
Yeah, and they absorb the wax and then become more little wicks. It's frightening.
I think I have either a story in this one or my other book about how I thought I was being really safe by putting a candle in sand. Mm-hmm. But the sand absorbed all the wax, the drip wax. And so I had 7 million wicks.
Yeah, that's sand became a book. That was one of those moments I was like, wow, sand, man. I've not had sand catch on fire before, but now I'm rethinking all of my safety standards.
It was a really, really big cleansing spell I did.
I guess so. And in the story, your office did not catch on fire. Someone came and found it in time, yes. Right? So, okay. Yep. Everyone can breathe now. I have like a giant cauldron that I put, if I'm going to be burning something for a long time.
I like it.
That I put down in there. And I've even had things in there that explode, but the cauldron catches it.
That's awesome.
Thankfully. But, you know, yeah, you got to be careful, especially candles that you're using for magic are different than candles that you've lit, you know, you lit a tea light because it's pretty in the room or whatever. They do stuff. They're working. It gets weird.
Have you done side-by-side tests?
I haven't.
I have.
Okay, tell me everything.
So for with my own candles, I do side-by-side tests because I need to. Like I'll do one candle that I'll set an intention, like a for real intention, and then I'll do one candle that I don't, just to see how they burn. And it's crazy. Like I'll have a money draw candle and this one will just go do-do-do, taking its time, burning down. And this one goes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? And it's just like, it's not that it just puddled down. It's like, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
How is this one like burning down like in a day, but this one, it just takes that couple of days like normal. I've done it with tea lights, where I set, a little intention and put a little oil. I put the same amount of oil on both of them. And then one I used for magic and one I didn't. And then, what's interesting is I think on the tea light, like this one didn't go at all, but this one burnt just fine. Cause I think what I was doing was like, no, we're not doing it for you. I've done that with chime candles. So I've done side-by-side tests.
On all things. You know, I've had candles that I haven't done somewhere like this one's for a spell and this one's just this is my control. I haven't done that, but I have had candles within a ritual, within a spell, burn at different rates, even though they're sitting right beside each other. They're the same candle, same mm-hmm. company, same day, you know, dressed in a similar fashion, but just had different purposes. Mm-hmm. In the spell or in the ritual, burn down at dramatically different rates. So I have seen that. But that's really fascinating that you did tests, you know, like,
Virgo.
Oh yeah, you're right. Virgo. Never mind. Never mind. Yeah. I have a Virgo moon. So analyzing is my love language, which people don't like. I know. They don't like to hear what I have to say.
And then when that happens, then you get to have a lot of fun reading it.
Oh, yes. You talk at length about reading the Candlespell. Please share with us some of that.
One of the reasons why Coventry's Blessed Herbal Candles drip on purpose is so you can read the wax. You can read the wax while it burns, and you can read the wax afterwards. Now, some people like to put it in candle holders. I'm all for it. Do it. And some people like to see what happens. I do a little bit of both. I like to contain it in the end. And it's so cool because you'll get stuff in the drips. And I have a picture of an angel that came out and I was like, whoa, that's so cool. And my sister sent me a picture. I'm like, you see the angel? And she didn't. And I was like, look at that angel. And so I had her send me a bunch of pictures. And when you're looking at the wax and reading the candle wax or even reading the flame afterwards, the trick is relax.
Mm-hmm.
And to read it, relax. It's all about relax. Look at it with a very soft focus. Don't try and see anything. See if you see anything. Sometimes there's nothing to see. Sometimes it's just a drip. And you kind of turn it, look at it, you see it out of the corner of your eye. It's like being psychic or seeing ghosts or something like that. You try and look at it, you're not going to see it. But just be soft about it, and then you can see it. But even take a picture of it. Sometimes you can see it in a picture, but you can't see it three-dimensionally. Because it does that flat thing, like my sister couldn't see the angel until she looked at the picture. And then what does it mean? Symbolism. Symbolism is 100% yours. In our one of our Facebook groups, a gal saw an owl in her wax, and she's like, "What does it mean?" I go, "What does it mean to you?" And she goes, "Well, I've always felt that owls meant death." And I'm like, "Well, does it mean death to you?" She goes, "Well, no, it doesn't." I said, "Well, what does it mean? You know, here's another meaning of owls." She goes, "Well, I like that better." And I go, "Well, then that's what it means." But it's like, don't worry about having the perfect meaning for it. It's the meaning that that it is today. You can get so lost in the book learning of meanings. What does it mean today? It could be this and this and this and huge interpretation. And then you think that I'm not good enough to understand what the symbolism in my candles mean. Does it feel good? Does it feel like it's a blessing? Does it feel like it's a warning? Start there.
Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the important things of having a practice and having, you know, experimenting and trying different things, because you're going to develop your own personal symbol system, which may not match any of the book.
Yep.
And it may pull things from here and pull things from there and pull things from this happened in my childhood. And that's why this means that to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it all, you're right. It all begins with, what do you see when you're looking at this? Is that meaningful? Does it matter at all? You know, and you start to develop what those different things mean to you. And they may be different at a different time. That's why that symbol's coming through right now. That's why you're seeing that, because that has meaning right now, you know, and you probably are able to interpret it, or it will be coming through as something else, you know?
Yeah. I love that. It's again, so we get worried that we're going to get it wrong. Mm-hmm. Robert Place, I was at he does a couple tarot decks that he's designed, and he was teaching a tarot class, and I love this, and I've never forgotten this. So he has this complicated tarot divination set. You know, he's like, you put all the, like, you have 150 cards or whatever. Ooh. I don't know.
And that's,
it was
a lot.
Not that many, but so yeah. He has like a bunch of cards in all these different directions. So you lay out all the cards, and then you look at it, and then you go, oh shit. And you get all the stress out of trying to know what it means. And so, like, you look at your candle and all the different things on it, and kind of go, oh shit, I don't know what it means. And just let yourself not know what it means at first. And then feel good about when you figure it out.
I love that.
because you're smart. Everyone is really smart, and you know you.
Mm-hmm. And be open to it coming to you later. There's so many times where I see something and I'm like, okay. And I can't figure out what it means in that moment. And then later when I'm washing dishes, it hits you and you're like, oh, and it all starts to connect. Or you have a dream later, you know, or 3 days down the road, you see the thing again. And that is where the meaning is. So it may not be, the connection may not be there yet. So definitely don't stress about it.
That's very wise and profound that it might be a series. Mm-hmm. You might see an owl and then something else, you know, and say, oh, I understand now. And then you walk into a business that has an owl on it. And then somebody hands you $100. You're like, oh, that's why an owl, you know?
Right. Right. You know, you just, I don't know. You start to get a sense of, I don't know yet. You know, I don't know, but it takes practice, but definitely don't stress. Stressing over it is going to squash your magic pretty much every single time, because you're not in your place of power. You're not acting from your will. You're acting from your fear, right. You know,
and journal.
Journal. Right. Journal. I'm so glad you said, say that one once more for the people in the back, because I'm write all the time it. Saying write journal,
journal.
Write it down. Journal. And then you go back and reference it, and you have your symbol system already written down for you.
You know how I finally got to journaling about my magic?
Tell me.
And I think I talk about it in the book, is I bought a bunch of 99-cent journals.
Oh, you bought the ugly ones. That's
I
right.
I bought the ugly ones. I bought the spiral bounds. I think it was NSYNC.
I'm writing this down because I harp on my students all the time about journaling, and they're always like, oh, I don't want to. And I'm like, I don't care. Do it. And you'll see why later.
I bought the ugly ones.
Buy the ugly ones.
And I wasn't worried about what it looked like. And I also started, the other thing that got me into that is I called it streams of insanity, but just streams of consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And I just like word vomited on the paper. And it felt so amazing. And then I would look at it even a week later, and I would look at it and I would be amazed at what I told myself about myself that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of it was automatic writing. I'm not sure, but it was. So I broke myself of worrying about not getting it perfect by doing it so horrifically imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then realizing that it had value later on. So just do it bad.
Writing just this
do
down
it,
too.
Do it bad. And then later on, do it good. And then do it better. And then do it amazing.
You have to do it bad first. You have to. It's going to be bad first.
Yeah, just do it bad first. With horrible handwriting, with multiple color pens, maybe a pencil that smears a little. Who cares? It's yours.
You got your eyes with little hearts. Nobody's going to read it. It's fine.
No.
That's wonderful. That's some, I was at a journaling workshop. I think it was Thorne Mooney that suggested using the first page to just sort of write where you are. Like, what's your name? What's going on? Where do you work? Just that stuff on that first page. Just to get something down, just put something on that first page. I like your word vomit idea. My students, they have to write 3 pages a day, and they hate me. I'm the worst. But they're like, I don't know what to write. So I really like that. Just vomit your words onto the page and come back to it later.
There's some interesting prompts. There's different books that I have that have interesting prompts. And I usually get like, maybe a quarter of the way into any of one of those books that have prompts just to get me going, and then I don't need it anymore. But, you know, those are fun because it just gets you going. And I have to admit, this year I haven't done much journaling. So it goes in spurts. So if you go away from it, don't worry about it. Go back again. You'll need it. And then when you don't need it, you won't need it. Now I bullet journal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like magic journal, but I bullet journal. And now I bullet journal in my digital journal.
That's what I do too. I have moved into a digital journal. It has a pen so I can write on it. So it feels like
do you I'm have a remarkable.
I do. It's literally right here. It's my favorite. I love it.
I forgot mine at home. And so I'm sitting here like, because normally I'll take notes during these things and remember what I want to say. I'm like, I'm sad.
I'm doing. I have my notes on here.
I love my Remarkable.
Oh, it's wonderful. Because I like to handwrite things. It helps me like, I can be like this, you know, sometimes. So just like physically doing the thing helps get it out of my brain in a way that typing doesn't.
Just because we're geeking out, when you're in public using your Remarkable, how many people come up and say, what is that?
A lot. I've gotten actually a couple of my friends have bought one because I have it and it's awesome. But I'm also like a big planner girl. So I have my planner in here. I have all my journals. I have my class notes. I love it. I love it. Because I used to carry around like tons of books in my purse and journals.
Did you make your own planner or did you buy one?
I have done both over the years, but this one, I bought one for this one, which I love because it's all hyperlinked and I didn't have to do it. You know?
You'll have to send me yours because I've been making my own.
I will. Yeah. I love this particular one. It's very customizable. This is not a commercial for Remarkable, but I'll send you a link to that. It's from an Etsy shop. So it's a person who has made it and I'll send it to you. It's great. But anyway, back to
it's magical.
It is magical. But one of the big problems that I'll speak about my students and not just the general people. My students have issues with journaling and finding ways to journal and finding ways that work for them to basically keep a record of what your experiences are. Because when you start to feel crazy later, and you will, if you're on a magical journey and you're doing the work, there's going to come a time where you're like, am I crazy? If not, mate, you might actually be crazy. But you're going to feel like crazy things are happening around you. And if you can go back and say, no, these are my experiences. I wrote that down. I knew I remembered that this happened in a dream and now it's happening and I have proof. It's helpful. It's validating and it's empowering when you start to see all the little pieces that are constantly coming towards you, flowing together, and you don't see it if you don't pay attention. And if you write it down, then you have it. So journal. That's what I'm saying to the other people. Please, everyone, go journal.
It's worth it. You learn what works for you, what resonates for you. You know, like I learned that rosemary resonates with me really well, as does basil and bergamot. I learned all those things because I kept talking about them. Like, wow, I reference basil a lot. Huh. How about that?
You know, and you don't have text messages that you can go back and look at with your guides and people like that, you know? So if I forget something someone told me, I'm looking back through our messages. Did we? Oh, you did say that. Oops. I don't have that for my guide. So I have to write that down so that I remember things, you know?
And what's really also, if you're just sometimes when I'm writing notes about like spells and what I want to do and this and that, it's, you get messages, like you said, spirit messages. And there's times when I'm not going to say I predicted anything, but I got personal messages about things to do for my business. And at the end of 19 and early 20, and I didn't know why, but I did them anyway. And it saved our bacon, kept us in business.
Yeah. No, that's a big, I think one of the episodes of this show, we were talking about, I don't know, we were doing a show about the fall and somehow it came out of my mouth. If we don't change what we're doing, we're going to have a plague. We're going to have, something is going to happen. And then that was in like August of 2019. So when the pandemic hit, I got a lot of messages. Do you know you said this? I did not. I had forgotten that I said that, but it's, you know, it's recorded. So keep a record of what you're doing magically. It will really show, it'll point you in the direction of your path and your practice and your gift, which is going to be different than everyone else's. So you're not going to find it somewhere else. You're going to find it in your stuff.
Thank you. Yes. Future self will thank you.
Absolutely.
I thank past Jackie a lot.
Oh, all the time. I try to set my future self up for a happy life. I try to love my future self the way I want to be loved now. that's the goal. That's why I have a calendar so that I don't forget stuff.
I love it.
But yeah, I really like the, let's talk about your Magic Five a little bit. You mentioned it, but you didn't tell us, like, you mentioned briefly sort of the individual categories. And those really correspond to with the elements, with the elements of magic that we use in order to sort of create. Tell us what those magic five are. I don't know if we actually listed them.
The magic five are prosperity, protection, mm-hmm. love, healing, and clearing.
And how do those relate to, you said you were working with your hierarchy of needs and how they each fit into, like you can fit every form of magic into all of those categories, really.
Right. So prosperity mm-hmm. relates with your physiological needs. Mm-hmm. So like your money and your abundance and like your house and your stuff like that. Protection hits with safety and protection, love and companionship. And then in Maslow, he talks about self-esteem, and I put healing and clearing in self-esteem, and then self-actualization in magic together. Then it works.
Right.
And then, so what I found is that when you're doing any spell, you're actually hitting all of them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So any spell you're working on, let's say a love spell. And it's so funny. People want a reading about love, but they want to do a spell about money. Have you ever noticed that?
I have noticed that actually. All of my tarot readings are about relationships, almost every single time. Even if they're about work, it's about relationships.
Let's mm-hmm. take that. So somebody has a work problem,
mm-hmm.
and they have a challenge with someone at work. This is a really good one because everybody has this.
Mm-hmm.
So they have somebody at work who's bugging them, and they're not okay with what's going on. And so now that it's a physiological need. So it deals with your money. It's also a relationship. So you have to deal with that. There's also some security issues, because if that doesn't go well, you know, there could be some protection issues. They could harm you. They could go against you in other ways. There's the healing and clearing. So healing is, so let's talk about the difference between the two. Healing is issues that are internal.
Mm-hmm.
So those are those things, those fears, those blocks that are internal that you have built from experiences, your experience of life that has said, oh, I'm just going to be afraid of this for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And then there's clearing, which are external. Those are the things that it's not that somebody else put them in your way, that it's you put them in your way. You made sure that this block is externally in your way to validate your internal fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you may, you know, those two go hand in hand.
Well, then you feel justified for holding that fear.
Well, we manifest what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
So we will go and find the thing that says, oh, I believe this. So yeah. Oh, there it is. There's that belief. So they go hand in hand. So you have this person at work who you need to do a spell around because they're interfering with your job. So now you've got to heal that thing that says, I have to have an antagonist. Let's just pull that out there. And then the clearing is I'm going to find an antagonist. So you're going to hit all of those things at the same time when you're doing that spell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that you said that just that little note of feeling like you have to have an antagonist. How many times is that a thing? And I have not put that together yet. The need people have to have that sort of nemesis, you know? They can't be the hero without the villain, right?
Oh, I'm working on a theory on the heroes and villains. Let me tell you what it is.
Okay, tell me.
Okay. So heroes
mm-hmm.
don't have accountability. Think about the Avengers. Well, maybe mm-hmm. they kind of have accountability later on, but early, like the hero of the story, the superhero, they come in and they stop the train, and the train's plowing through all the buildings in New York City and blah, blah, blah. But they stop the train and they save the two guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the mom and the kid that are on the train.
It's dangling out the side. Yeah.
But in the meantime, 17 buildings are destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they go, everyone goes, woo, thank you. You know, like Ghostbusters.
Right.
You know, all the stuff that's destroyed, but everyone's like, whoa, you guys are great. said thank you so much. There's no accountability. Mm-hmm. It's easy to be a hero because you go in and you save the day, and then you walk away. But you create chaos in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
Supervillains, the evil minds, you know,
mm-hmm.
they have to plot and plan. There's a lot of work. But you know who changes the world? The supervillains change the world. They create the evil rays, you know, and that evil ray is then now turned into the laser that you use in surgery.
Mm.
You know, so they kind of create the changes in the world. They're the catalyst that creates major change.
Now that is true. That is true. I think people are generally content to keep the status quo, and something does have to come along to shake that up before we're mm-hmm. willing to look at things in a different way or see what is being overlooked and allowed when we just sort of sit at the status quo and don't really examine things, you know?
Yeah.
So you're right about that.
So I've been watching and looking at heroes, villains, the whole thing, and watching the superhero world and how that's going, and like, cause that's our modern day mythology.
It really is. You're right.
And so how does that work in magic and
how does that reflect our collective psyche? You know, like what is happening in our collective unconscious that these are the way we perceive, well, you know, and our and current then, myths.
Yeah. And then when heroes are held accountable,
mm-hmm.
And you can see it in some of the Avenger movies, and you can see it in, there was a, Will Smith had a movie where he was a superhero, but they held him accountable.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but, he got in trouble because he was tearing up streets.
You're starting to see it in a lot of books and literature as well. That whole, you know, a flawless superhero thing is starting to kind of crumble.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, it's very uncomfortable for everyone. It's uncomfortable for the reader or the watcher, and it's uncomfortable for the people in the story because we don't know how to keep a hero accountable. So, but look at that in your magical world too. So you want to, we want to be heroes in our own lives. Nobody wants to be the villain in their own life. So here you are, realizing that maybe you have been the villain in your own life. Maybe you haven't taken care of yourself enough, or maybe you've done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mm-hmm. like when I've done something wrong because I can justify things in a snap. But sometimes I need to step back and go, I'm the jerk here mm-hmm. and I need to make amends and I need to be held accountable. But that's really, really magical.
It is.
It's really powerful. So being the hero is not necessarily the best thing. Sometimes being the worker behind the hero, or being the worker who builds the thing, and you don't need a hero. Cause it's like winning the lottery. You don't know how to manage the money.
Mm-hmm.
You become worse off than you were before. But when you build your wealth piece by piece, you learn how to deal with it piece by piece.
You know, and I have to say, as far as a soul journey goes, and as far as becoming a better person, a more compassionate person, my biggest lessons have come from me being the asshole, you know, and recognizing it was me, I'm the problem, you know, in this situation. And how can I not do this again? And how can I see that in others as mm-hmm. well? You know, and that comes down to a lot of the spell, you know, when people that maybe don't practice or that are new to the practice, ask for spell work, it's almost always protection spells, or someone's out to get them, or, you know, there's something they're afraid of and somebody has wronged them. Mm-hmm. And when you start listening to the story, it's not so simple and it's not so black and white, and they hold zero compassion for what the other person might be experiencing, you know,
right.
So I've been the asshole often enough that hopefully I can look at a situation when someone's being a jerk to me and think, wait a minute, you know, it may not be so cut and dry, you know, as I think it is.
Yeah. A lot of times, that whole vengeful vengeful thing or I'm going to be judge and jury is not, it's just, you're just starting a war that doesn't need to be. Mm-hmm. And, there's a whole part of the book that I was started to write that I had to cut out, which is the dark side of magic, mm-hmm. which I think would be a really fun book to write, which is it's like the warning side. The warning side of prosperity, the warning side of protection magic, the warning side of love magic.
I would love to read that book. I would love to see that book out there. Seriously. Yeah.
Like, hey, here's how you can get like the obsessive part of love magic.
Yes. You know, and you've talked a lot about why do you want to do the spell? But it needs to be addressed as well. Should you do the spell? You know why you want it. You know what your motivations are. Should you do that? Mm-hmm. You know? And people don't necessarily think about that either. Please write that book. Write that book. Well, I think we're getting close to time. I think we've gone a little over. I'm sorry. I've just had such a good time chatting with you.
Selena, it's been great.
I've just got two more quick questions for you.
Okay.
So this is my question that I ask all of our guests that come on the show. If you, what is the big project for you? It doesn't have to be in the works. It could just be sort of a brainchild. It could just be maybe one day this would be great if. What would that project be?
Well, my next project, which I'm super excited about, is I'm bringing out, I'm working on a line of candles called Aunt Jackie's Ultimate. It's candles, oils, and sprays. So these are my favorite recipes that I have made, and they work so brilliantly. And it's really, really, a lot of it's based on the Magic Five. And people will recognize some of the names and stuff, but these are my babies. So some of them I've made for years, but these are my ultimate recipes and candles.
Oh, that's awesome. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And those are great for when you're like super busy and you can't necessarily break down and do all of the work yourself to have yeah. those handy. And they are so very potent. I haven't used those, but I have used some of your candles in the past and they're very, they do the thing. They do the thing.
Thank you.
So tell our listeners where we can find you.
You can find me at CoventryCreations.com. That's our home site. That's our business site that has all of our information and where to find us, a lot of our socials on it. And you can find us on every social platform. You look up Coventry Creations or Coventry Candles. You can find me, Jackie Smith, but it's easier to find Coventry. There's a lot of Jackie Smiths in the world. And you can also, on Facebook, we have a group called the Witches Union Spellcaster Club. Mm-hmm. And we have the Witches Union, and it's a fun little thing where we ask questions and a little group that we have some fun stuff with there.
Fun. Well, awesome. And we will put all of your links and links to your book in the show description. And be sure if you're listening to this episode, check out our YouTube channel. This is a video episode as well. And you can see our lovely guests face to face. And it's been really wonderful chatting with you. I do hope you'll come back and see us again.
Any invitation, I will be hopping right back on. This has been great. Wonderful. It's a great show. I've enjoyed myself so much.
Thank you. Thank you. And everybody, have a great rest of your week and blessed be.
Thank you all so much for listening, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe through your favorite podcast provider. It helps us get our podcast in front of more listeners just like you. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can leave us a voicemail by clicking the link in the description of this episode, and you can always find us on Facebook and Instagram by searching for Crossroads and Cauldrons Podcast.